This episode of Let the Hate Flow Through You is brought to you by Chris Clem.
Uncle Hordano, when I grow up, I want to be Chris Clem.
Well, why wait till you grow up? You could be Chris Clem now.
Really?
Sure thing, kid. Put on these Zubaz pants.
These are really big.
Yeah, you'll grow into them once you start eating enough Dunkin' Donuts and White Castle.
My parents tell me that's not healthy at all.
Well, do you want to be Chris Clem or not?
Yes!
Now, who's your favorite Cavs player?
Sean Kemp.
And who's your favorite rapper?
Kid Rock.
And who's the best rock star of all time?
Billy Joel.
You are ready.
Give me a suggestion. I'll make a joke.
I'm done playing now.
That's Chris Clem.
This is John Bruton. You're listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You with Jeremy Shear and El Hornado Diablo.
Hate flow through you, your weekly dose of audible hatred. I'm Jeremy Shear.
El Hordano Diablo.
Good news, everyone. I'm medicated again, which means we can talk about comedy. Joining us this week is future Chicago comic and podcaster, Zach O'Ryan.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, Zacho. So, tell me, why do you hate being a new comic?
Oh, man, where do I begin, you know?
Well, there's the beginning, so I'm sure
it is the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the beginning. I'm 6 months in, man, so I'm still experiencing new things.
Just
that
a little
hate about,
baby, man.
About being a new comic. And you guys know how there's a bunch of walls that you need to break down initially, right? Personal walls, I mean, if you have a job, professional walls, and then just like social walls, really.
Yeah.
I know for me, the hardest thing was convincing myself that I could do it, I guess.
Yeah.
And then after I got on stage the first time, the next step was convincing other people to take me serious.
Right.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be 10 times harder than convincing myself that I could do it.
Now, is it convincing your peers to take you seriously, or is it convincing audiences to take you seriously? I mean, what's the biggest hurdle for you?
Oh, no, it's definitely convincing your peers, because you got to convince the peers that you're serious about this, or you're never going to be able to climb those stairs and get those gigs that you want to get to where you can convince the audience that you're serious. So okay. I think personally, it's convincing the other comics and the other bookers that you're actually going to be here. You're not going to be doing this thing for 3 months and then bouncing before you can actually start flowing and figuring out who you are with them.
No, everybody sucks when they start. I mean, there's no question about that.
Yeah, sucked. I know.
I was terrible. Going back to what you were saying, though, like breaking down those walls, it's just like a dish sesh now. My biggest problem with being a new comic or new comics, people try to break down those personal walls too quickly.
Yeah.
Like, they try to jump down people's throats like, oh, hey, let's be friends.
Yeah.
Like, right off the bat. Like, and if you know anything about comedy or comics, whatever, is, like, a history, we're all fucking weird.
Yeah,
we all have our personal hangups and shit, so it's, like, to try and immediately be friends with people, like, I mean, I hit it off with you pretty quickly.
Yeah.
There's certain people, you know, Ryan, that I hit it off with pretty quickly, but you get shunned a lot, especially when you're like, oh, hey, how's it going? Like, you just kind of got to do your own thing for a minute.
Yeah. No, and that was the first thing I found out week one of getting involved in this, was that people from, that there's two different worlds that you're getting involved in. You're getting involved in the comedy side of things, and you're being around these people doing comedy,
mm-hmm.
and then you're also introducing them into your own personal life.
Yeah.
I mean, just because you're around them.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you're doing four nights a week mics, you're seeing the same people every day. They're going to be brought into your personal
life. It's
like
a second job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
These are your coworkers.
Yeah.
Per se. You know what I mean?
So it's just getting used to the office politics, so to speak.
Oh, that, fuck, man. And they're there.
Yeah. What's been the biggest problem for you in terms of the office politics?
I think people lose sight of the fact that we're all grown adults. before we're comics.
I would agree with that.
And that is a big issue. I haven't seen it so much personally. I've seen it on a couple occasions personally. I'm a very personable person.
Right.
So I like to figure out who I'm talking to, get to know you. But like you said, no two comics are the same, not only on stage, but in their personal lives. You know what I mean? So you have to juggle that. And the thing about it is, and Jeremy, I only know you so much, but I know for a fact that the way you carry yourself, you consider yourself a man before you consider yourself a comic. Mm. And you would want to be treated accordingly.
I would prefer it, but the further I get into this business, the more it's like, well, comedians aren't really people, so there's just there's just shit that you have to deal with that a normal person wouldn't.
Right.
So, you know, there's just, as much as I would like to be, you know, treated as a person, I just know that there's a certain way that people view me, and I'm going to be treated according to that rather than, you know, just who I am personally. And unfortunately, it's like that for everybody. You're projecting this image of who you are, not just, you know, because of what you're doing on stage, because of the things you're doing off stage to climb that ladder. That's all that people are focusing on. And it's not just other comedians, it's audiences. Like, you know, because of what I talk about on stage, people come at me different off stage because, you know, since I'm dirty, like, I hear everybody's dirty secrets.
Yeah.
And
Air mine.
We won't, but any dirty laundry you want to air, nobody is paid the $20 a month to not have their name mentioned on Let the Hate Flow Through You, so you can feel free.
You're all at high risk.
Everybody's at high risk.
Right. Threat level midnight.
And I definitely understand that, and I kind of view it as if, let's just say it's a new job you take on, right?
Okay.
It's a new job, so there is a certain hierarchy. However, the people that I will come to respect and that I think down the line everybody will come to respect are the people that remember who they're talking to in terms of the position they're in the comedy world. Okay. Remember that the person you're talking to is 4 to 5 months in. Remember that person's a year in. Remember that person's 2 years in. Because you've been in the game 6 to 7 years, 7 to 8 years, voice your opinion. Don't try to help the comics that you don't believe in, that you don't think are putting out the effort, that you're wasting your time. But at the same time, behind the mic, don't treat me like I'm some 6 or 7 year old kid that doesn't know anything about life.
Right.
When in all actuality, all I'm trying to do is learn this new tool.
Right.
You know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It does. And it's difficult to do that only because, you know, You're new. So, you know, the only impression that some people have of you is your time behind the mic.
Right.
So that's all they're judging you on. And, you know, there are people that they don't do the social aspect of comedy.
Right.
Like at all. They show up, they do their time, they leave. So all they know about you is what you're doing behind the mic. And since, unfortunately, this is a competitive business, I tend to shy away from the competitiveness of it because, you know, I'm a scene guy. I always have been. I always will be. So I want to build a thing that involves everybody. You know, if you have that little bit extra on somebody, whether it's length of time involved, or, you know, just the fact that, you know, somebody like 2 months in might be better than you, and then they'll use that to feel better about themselves. It's nonsense, but it's all part of this whole competitiveness thing that's
right.
happening. There are only so many spots on those shows that you want to get on that are available. And, you know, people try to get that by any means necessary. And it sucks, but that's just the way this business works.
Right. And don't get me wrong, man, for the most part, I couldn't be happier that I started my comedy career in Cleveland.
Right.
There's just so many people that seem like they're actually interested in the new comics that are coming up to better the scene. And there's so many new comics that are coming into the scene that you can kind of grow with, you can come up with.
Yeah, comes in waves, yeah.
Yeah, there's still, I mean, there's still the bullshit barriers and the politics behind it, but, and to be honest, a lot of times in the Cleveland scene, a lot of times it seems like it's accidental versus everybody else getting into it. Now, I actually have some personal relationships with an accidental, so I haven't felt that for the most part.
Right.
But I can definitely see how that would become kind of like a thing if it keeps progressing the way it is progressing right now.
Well, where is it progressing? Like, where do you see it going?
There's a huge, there's a divide. And I don't want to speak for everybody, but I'll speak for myself. I feel like even the 6 months that I've been in, there's been a strong divide. And I think it's because there's the huge accidental fest that's coming up right now.
Right.
Which is awesome, man. I mean, and like I said, I've got great friends that are in accidental, so I want accidental to blow up, you know, bigger, as big as it possibly can. So that thing's coming up. So I think accidental is in a spotlight of itself right now amongst like the newer comics, to where now the newer comics that are having these personal issues, or even not even personal, even like the comedic issues with the people that may belong to accidental, are starting to say, okay, this thing is big. They're starting to shun us. And then even accidental are starting to say, these new guys are starting to get way too, you know, big for their britches. We're going to pull back too. And if that keeps happening, unfortunately, that gap is just going to keep widening.
Yeah. I think part of that comes with age, though, because, you know, if I look back at who I used to work with and, you know, what they're doing now, and it used to be there were more older cats in the scene that have been around, but as time progresses, those guys, like, realize, well, wait a minute, if I want to make money doing this, it's just me. Can't build, like, scene building does not make you money.
Nope.
And we covered this with Bruton on the segregation episode 29.
Bruton?
Yeah, Bruton. But, you know, if you're doing local shows, you don't make any money unless you're drawing, and very few people in this town draw. Mike Polk draws, Bill Squire draws. Accidental draws, assuming that they have somebody coming in or it's an event, like a regular accidental showcase. Like if they, like when Ramon came back and was working out his hour,
right?
They did those shows at the apartment. I did a show in front of two people,
right?
So it's not, you know, when they do an event, they draw. But that's it. Like no one else in town draws, so that's who's making money,
right?
And if you want to do this full time, you have to go elsewhere.
Right.
Whether it's the road, whether it's moving. And so people are slowly starting to figure it out, oh, it's just me that's going to make me my money.
Right.
And that's part of the reason for the divide. What, as a new comic, the only way to really, like, okay, how are you going to help these guys make money, basically? And, you know, the answer is, you're a new guy. Either you wow our audience or you bring people out.
Right.
And, you know, they're just, I think a lot of what they're experiencing is, well, this is what we need from you guys, and they're not getting it.
Right.
So that might be where some of the hostility is coming from. But, you know, realistically, what shows do you want to be doing?
So it's a little bit different now because I'm moving to Chicago in September.
Right.
So the relationships with like the bookers or these shows that I would want to be doing with this gradual climb up. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to get into like, you know, an improv or
right.
or something like that has kind of slowed down a little bit. But that was like the direction I was heading. I wanted to get into
the clubs.
I wanted to get into the club scene, which is still my objective.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, but it's kind of taken a turn with me moving to Chicago and taking on an entirely new scene. Right now, I'm trying to build up my library of material.
Right.
Right.
But my direction was getting into the clubs. getting into the clubs, and maybe not as quickly as possible, but as efficiently as possible, and doing it my way, to be honest. I think right now, and I don't know if I'm skipping ahead, but right now, the biggest concern that the biggest issue I have is the take my advice or we're gonna or you're shunned kind of mentality. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think part of that is because every single person that does stand up has a different way of doing it, and not just like on stage. The business aspect of it is too. For example, for 12 years, I have been doing dirty comedy.
Right.
I have never been anything else. So I have to do my own shit. That is just what it is.
And I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. But it's, you know, if you wanna be dirty, you are going to have to self-promote, or you're going to have to be a fucking genius off the bat because, you know, it's just what it is. And then, you know, people are just starting to get into the clubs. Like, actual work, not just, like, hanging out and doing guest sets. Like, you know, they're emceeing weeks, they're featuring weeks. So, in order to do that, there's a certain set of steps that you have to take. Right. Then there's, you know, people that are, they're drawing locally. There's people that do the road. There's people that are doing weirdo shit.
Right.
Like, you know, there's a whole alt scene in Akron that nobody knows about, and they have their own way of doing things. Kent is completely different. You know, there's a whole bunch of ways to do this, but people get locked into their one specific way. Like, this is how you succeed because the blueprint has been laid by somebody. But there's many different ways to accomplish what you want to in stand-up. And it's disturbing to me that, you know, basically, you know, people are so myopic that they think that there's only one way to go about it. And I wholeheartedly disagree with that. And I think that's where a lot of the disconnect is coming from.
And it makes no sense because we started off with a segment talking about how literally no one is even close to being similar.
Oh, yeah.
But right. There's no two comics that I even know right now in the Cleveland scene that I think could just grab someone else's 5-minute bit, do it, and succeed at it. Just because that's not that you're different. That's not you.
Right.
Yeah, and which is fucking amazing because we don't really have a theft problem here.
Right.
Because Cleveland is a lot like, you know, out west where it's like who you are based. Like, you know, when you're out there doing stuff, it's you hear what I hear anyway, is that you go out to LA, it's like you're building this character along with your material. In New York, it's like you're building material. So it's like it's more character based, and we have this, you know, this Midwestern thing where, you know, we're kind of nice, and but it's like, okay,
it's like this hodgepodge of fucking
Who you are as a person on stage is just as important as what you're saying.
Right.
So if you can't match who you are with what you're saying, there's a disconnect there, and it's not going to work.
Right, right, right.
So it's like there's not a lot of people like going around and lifting jokes because like you're not that person. You can't do that joke.
Yeah,
which is great.
Right. Like I'm 6'5", 235. I can't go up there with Marcello's penguin bit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just not going to work. But and that's the beauty behind it is I can't do a poop joke because I don't look like someone that's going to say poop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm going to say shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, I'm going to wipe my ass. You know what I mean? I'm not going to say butt or poop. Like, that's just, it's not going to work for me.
Right.
And my thing has always been with that is, man, I'm a student right now, and I get it. And I'm trying to absorb every bit of information I can from everybody that can help me out. New comics, older comics, even I'll take some advice from people in the audience. Like, it's just, I'm trying to listen to every single angle that I can. And the problem is that I see is take my advice or the leverage I have over you, I'll use it. Like, I'm like, all of a sudden I feel if I don't use the advice you told me or if I keep saying the joke you told me I shouldn't say in a certain club.
Well, my thing with that is,
am I not going to get work anymore?
Well, you're going to, the thing is like, I mean, I've seen that happen with comics before where, you know, even when I hosted the Rally, like where somebody would, you know, somebody newer than me would come along and tell a joke and I'd be like,
that doesn't really work this way. You should try it this way. If you want to keep doing it your way, that's fine. Yeah. You're going to figure out if it works or if it doesn't.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm just trying to help, but that's why, like, when I do occasionally go out with him and I sit there at open mics and I see people who I've never seen before and I hear them tell a joke and I just want to walk up to them and be like, dude, if you add this on, that'll crush. And it's like, it's not my place though.
Yeah.
It's not my place. Like, if somebody wants to ask for my opinion, sure, but I'm not going to fucking give it to them.
Yeah.
Like, just because I don't host a mic anymore. I don't want to host a mic anymore.
Hey, you're a busy fucking guy. Dude, you have your own things to deal with. You got your own bills, your own problems. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, it's like, I have a vision of where I want to be, kind of, or at least I see the path. You know what I mean? And I know the path I at least want to be on and the character I want to create with the jokes I want to tell. So to give me the advice that would say, for this bit, completely leave that path, to me is like, I get what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to make it fit what I'm trying to do. And if not, I'll throw it out.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean? But I either want to...
And if they're right, you'll use it.
Exactly. I want to attack comedy the way I've attacked everything in my entire life. I want to do it my way because I think there's some pride to that. And I think there's
there
some
absolutely
is. I think there's some satisfaction to that, whether it takes you longer or not. But I want to fail or I want to succeed my way. And I know I'll succeed because that's the confidence that I have in this. It may take me longer. I may stumble and fall a few times on my own feet, but I think that's going to make me stronger. Now, I'm not saying I'm not listening to people give me advice, man. Right. That's the last thing I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if I don't take your advice, I'm not shitting down your throat, man. You know what I mean? I'm not saying you don't know what you're talking about. I'm saying I'm gonna work with it. I'm gonna massage this out a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this is how I want to do things.
And you're entitled to that. You're the one getting up on stage telling the jokes you wrote.
Yeah.
So you're entitled to tell them however the fuck you want to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's just I see this a lot actually with there are people that are like, okay, they'll see somebody and try to mold them.
Right.
And the biggest example I can think of that is the Cleveland Improv used to have Monday auditions where you would go in at noon and you would do 3 minutes in front of the head manager and then he would give you notes. And if you if you showed that you were following his advice, he would put you up on their open mic, which was once a month. And you'd get more and more time as the more you did it.
Like, that sounds crazy to me.
But that's what it was, because the end goal of that open mic wasn't to give opportunities to new comics. Like, he didn't give a fuck about that. Right. You know, he was papering the room, and then people would also like, hey, it's $1 to see me come out. But, you know, the end goal of that was he's building a new MC. It didn't work. None of the people that came out of that room ended up working the club regularly except for one guy. And he didn't need any of that advice. But what I did see were people that had a specific style that wasn't necessarily like suited for MC work. But because like he was trying to put that mold on them, it ruined it.
Right.
Because, you know, you can't take somebody that sounds like, basically, this guy sounded like a slam poet.
A slam poet?
You know,
like Def Jam.
Shit like that. But, you know, people loved it. It was like, it was a completely different style from what was going on at the time. It was a lot of words, not a lot of pauses. But he was memorizing this long spiel, and you know, then the mold was put on him. It was like, you got to break this up into jokes, and it just didn't work the same. You know, he had something that he could go like other places besides this club and crush.
Yeah.
But because that mold was put on him and he didn't do it his way, now he doesn't do comedy anymore.
See, and that's how sad is that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How sad is that to know you created something like that guy created that. Through what he knew didn't fit the
his
mold.
His art.
You know what I mean? Yeah, he knew that shit didn't fit the mold. He knows that doesn't fit the mold. And he still did it, which made him probably easily buy into it, mm-hmm. which made it work.
Well, I've never worked a club before. I know you have.
Yeah.
I never did. That was never going to be what I wanted to do in the first place. But I know I've heard things from Shear, other people who do work clubs, that club owners, and I understand they've been around the business for a very long time. They do, to an extent, know what they are talking about.
Yeah.
But you can't say, oh, this is the only thing that works and you need to do this if you want to work here. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Like,
well, I mean, if you want to work here.
Yeah. I mean, sure.
Absolutely. But why?
I'm not going to compromise myself.
Exactly. And why are there so many people that say, okay, I'll suckle this teat and I'll do what you are saying I need to do to work this club. And I get it, man. There's two different ways of viewing this, right? And it doesn't work for everybody. Mm-hmm. The approach that I take to certain things are, if that doesn't feel right, I'm not going to do it, man.
Right.
It may be completely the wrong thing to do, and I may learn a month down the road that I fucked up, but that's just naturally what I do. You know what I mean? And then that doesn't work for everybody, though. And the same way it doesn't work for me to say, okay, this isn't what I want to do, but I'm going to use this place, or I'm going to use this booker, or right. use this person to get where I need to go. I have a hard time doing that. It's not yeah. easy for me to use somebody.
Right.
It's not easy for me to act a certain way in front of you, or act a certain way in your place, or go on stage and act a certain way if it's not me, because it comes off awful.
Yeah. No.
For instance, I do not do the funny stop. I do not do it. I've done it. I've done it twice. I had a blast. I had a great time. There are people that come there for comedy. They come to laugh. I did it within the first 3 weeks of starting comedy, and it's one of the venues that made me feel like I could actually do this.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the rules and regulations and the things behind the scene to yeah. that place, since then I have refused to do it. And it's just because that's, to me, and it's not a knock on the club, man. Yeah. It's just that it's doesn't club. Work for me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's
that doesn't
club.
Work for me. And being in such an being in my comedic infancy, I don't want to expose myself to something that I feel is going to take me out of my element. You know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It does make sense, but the thing about not doing the funny stop is that is
a great club.
Well, it's the one club that'll work you before you're ready.
Yeah.
So, yes, there is a lot of bullshit that you have to put up with.
Yeah, you know. I talked to you about it.
Yeah. Pete's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just what it is. Tony's crazy, too.
I don't think I know Tony. Who's Tony?
Tony is his brother. Everybody's crazy there.
I never met Tony.
I have a long history with all of them, and I've learned... You know, I've learned to approach them as human beings and disagree with them in other aspects of how they do things.
You told another comic I was a dirty comic and didn't take this serious because I said, fuck the Patriots. And I stand behind them. Fuck the Patriots. I stand behind that statement.
I respect them, but fuck the Patriots.
Mm-hmm. I stand behind that statement. Fuck the Patriots. The only cuss word I dropped on 2 5-minute sets, and the one Thursday I didn't show up, he told them that I wasn't taking this serious and I was a dirty comic. Jeremy, I've heard you say some nonsense on that stage that is hilarious. Fuck the Patriots is hilarious. I don't care who says it. And it's true. Fuck the Patriots.
Fuck the Patriots indeed.
Fuck the Patriots.
And like I said, man, I'm not bashing and I'm not trying to burn any bridges there. It's something that, and I can honestly see myself when I'm comfortable with myself and when I'm comfortable with myself on stage and who I am and the character that I want to be on stage. I'd love to do the funny stop again, but right now it's while I'm trying to build this material I'm writing for what Pete wants for that stage, it's not going to work.
Right. So you don't want to limit yourself to being 100% like clean, not like TV clean. Pete doesn't want TV clean. Pete wants PG.
I don't want to limit myself because I have no desire to be a corporate comedian.
Right. I mean, but like my going back to like, you're not, you're like, I don't want any bad blood between you and that club, blah, blah, blah. Like, and it's not even the club. It goes back to what we were talking about being the comics and shit. Like, if I can respect you enough to listen to what you have to say to me, you can respect me enough to understand that I may not want to do that.
Right.
It's simple as that. And everybody's fucking egos get in the goddamn way. And yes. We're all egomaniacs. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing what we do.
Right? Yes.
Everybody is a fuck. I don't care if you're the most fucking timid person on the planet. You're not doing this because you don't have an ego.
Right. You get on stage and you're trying to tell everybody, I'm going to make you laugh. Like, how egotistical is that?
It's very egotistical.
Fucking very.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, insane.
Comedy is an art form, just like, you know, music is an art form. But like somebody who gets up on stage and sings, that's a fucking talent that they practice very hard to be like, have the balls to get up, or the gall, whatever, to get up on stage and belt out a fucking, you know, while one person plays piano, or I've seen it where people don't.
Yeah.
I mean, being a comic though, dude, you have to like get up on stage in front of other fucking comics. Very first, the toughest fucking people to make laugh. And half the time they don't. This is one of my biggest problems. You and me have talked about this a million times, Shear, is that when you first start out and you're only doing fucking rooms in front of comics who don't want to laugh at your jokes, especially if you're funny.
Yeah.
Because then it makes them feel inadequate. And nobody, like, fuck you, dude. Yeah, like, that shit was so beat for me so fast.
Yeah.
That irritates the fuck out of me.
And that's what I open mics are hard. Shows are fun. You get on stage, and as long as you are comfortable with what you're gonna do, and as long as you can get someone who's there to laugh, you coast. But like you said, man, you go to these open mics, especially being a new comic, and I'll bring this back into being a new comic, since that's what the topic is here. Being a new comic, you're telling me I gotta go on stage right now for 5 minutes and tell a couple jokes that I wrote on my lunch break to Bill Squire, who I've been listening to on the radio for three years. You know what I mean? And I got to try to make him laugh. Thank God Bill's just a nice person, so he laughs. I don't think he thinks I'm funny, but he laughs just to make me feel better about myself.
Open mics are just going to the gym, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all it is. If you just look at it like, yes, you want to make people laugh, but the most important part of open mics, to me at least, is that you're getting your reps in on a joke for that show, the fun part that you want to do.
Right.
You've now told that joke that you wrote on your lunch break once. You've said it out loud. You have a little bit of muscle memory there. You know, you've said it once. You kind of can figure out, okay, how can I say this next time, or did I say it perfectly this time? And
you feel the cadence.
Yeah,
it's just the syllables.
It's working on your basics. Yeah. That's so important. And I know, like, standing up there and looking at people that are on their phones and talking and not really paying attention to you is very disheartening. But you know, it's just getting the goddamn basics out that, you know, If you miss out on that because it sucks, then you're going to be like laps behind everybody else.
Yeah, like you said, man, it's practice.
It's
better than me standing in my basement telling my jokes to my dog. You know what I mean? At least I know there's one or two people in that audience that are kind of interested in what I have to say, especially if it's a new joke that, you know, I haven't said at this open mic before.
Yeah.
But another thing about open mics is just being comfortable with the mic. Like, and how stupid does that sound? But like, the hardest thing for me for the first 3 months was getting that goddamn mic off the stand. Yeah. You know what I mean? Taking that mic off the stand and moving it was the scariest thing I've ever done in my life.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, dude. I'm up there sweating my ass off, shaking the stand. Yeah. Then I got to turn back around and see all these people staring at me, waiting to make them laugh. That was the scariest thing to me. Then once you get past that, there's like more shit you got to break through. So
yeah.
it's just like, and the way I tell everybody, it's just like anything you first start doing, dude. It's not going to be easy.
You're scared. You're nervous. Easy, you don't know what you're fucking doing.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
It's not. I mean, it's not fucking easy.
Just get up there and be yourself.
Like, the fuck up, dude. That is not how this works. Like,
you get up there.
Yeah,
and be yourself.
You get up there and be yourself. No one wants me to be myself. Trust me.
No. You're an exaggerated.
Not what you want.
You're an exaggerated version of yourself.
Yeah. Be myself. I'll sit in the back and smoke a joint, dude.
That's like being a wrestler. Who are the best characters? The guys that fucking take the little parts of their fucking real life and add it in there and amplify it. That's what makes you good.
Yeah.
That's what makes you fucking good.
I mean, how much of a battle is just to try to get the audience to listen to you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You get the audience to listen to you. You can put it on cruise control.
I had a bit of a problem with that for a while when I hosted my mic, because I was pretty much known as the drunk host.
Yeah?
I just got... I was like the worst version of Doug Stanhope. Like... The absolute.
Is there a worse version of Doug Stanhope?
I don't know. I was pretty.
Gave him a run.
I mean, not like, and he's the best. Yeah, so, yeah. But like, as far as I went, in this dingy little fucking bar, I get completely, like, I've said this before on the show. Sheer remembers this. I once told the same joke 3 times in a row.
Yeah. Because he was so hammered, he didn't.
And I was fucking on drugs too, but whatever.
Yeah, I did that out in Youngstown.
Did it work one of the times at least?
It worked the first 2 times, and then the 3rd time, everybody was like, "You did that twice."
Yeah, it's man, yeah.
Where I was going with that though was all I was gonna say was that like people being on their phones and like having the crowd listen to you. I was the guy. I was the host, so I was like, I was the guy to be like, "Hey, what the fuck are you doing on your phone?" Or for a while, the crowd turned against me.
Yeah, for sure, man. And it's that's a tough climb back up to the top.
That's
man.
All right.
Yeah,
I was never at the top.
it's just so many walls, man. Especially like, and it's I've really tried to immerse myself into this. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm not doing something at least four nights a week, I start feeling like, oh shit, I really got to get back out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's and that's what it is. This is. I don't care how funny your aunt thinks you are on Thanksgiving, dude. Like, this is not for the people that are the funniest in their office. You know what I mean? This is for the people that are willing to put the time in. And I luckily kind of understood that coming into it. But I think if you don't, man, and you expect this to just be something that you're going to step up there and tell your little dick joke that you wrote, you know, this morning, it's going to suck, dude.
He's looking at you, Sheer.
It's going to suck, man, because it's just not writing the... Writing something funny is actually kind of easy, if you really think about it. Saying
if you can
something
laugh at,
funny...
Yeah.
Like, how many people... You guys are on Facebook. How many funny Facebook... My aunt posts a funny Facebook status today. I laughed at it. Mm. My aunt is not funny.
Yeah. No, another part of like being a fucking new comic is when you start telling people in your personal life that you're doing that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Tell me a joke.
Yeah.
Fuck, that is not how any of this works.
It is not
like
how it works,
if you want to see me fucking tell a joke, come to a show that I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm not like somebody tried to put me on the spot last week and I'm just like, "This no, fuck off."
Yeah.
Like cuz I'm only going to like I can't tell you a joke the same way I'm going to tell it on stage. It doesn't work like that. I'm going to stumble through like, "Oh yeah, and I do this and then like, oh yeah, abortion."
Yeah. Like, and like how committed can I be to a joke in my living room talking just to you? You know what I mean?
Right.
Now I feel like my pauses that I have on stage are just acted out. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and you can tell when a comic's trying material out on you, or when he's talking in bit.
Oh yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean. And like, I don't want to be like that, dude. I'm not always on. 90% of the time, I'm fucking relaxing, playing a video game, watching TV, just chilling, dude.
Nope.
The last thing I want to do if I'm on stage is drawing a crowd. You know what I mean?
No, like, well, like, this happened to me. This has happened to me more.
Or when I'm not on stage.
Yeah,
I say that?
Yeah, yeah.
When I'm not on stage.
When I'm
on stage, I for sure want to be drunk.
But no, like, one of the things, like, that I do is, like, I never work on material. It was probably maybe a year ago. I was with my buddy, his brother, and another friend of mine. And we're all just, like, shooting the shit, you know? Like, and I'm making them laugh. Like, not even, like, I mean, I'm trying to make them laugh, but I'm not doing a bit. And my buddy goes, "Are you working on shit right now?" And I was like, "No, why?" And he was like, and then he like went through, he's like, you said this. I was like, "Fuck, I wish I were recorded that."
Yeah. And it is funny. And then vice versa too. Like, how many times have you told a joke, like just in a standard setting, and you got people dying?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I'm just going to say that on stage. And you get on stage and say it, crickets.
Yeah, don't work like that.
And it's
like
because the cadence is, there's the different way to manipulate things on stage. You can't just get on stage and tell the story that happened last night at your family Christmas party
right.
without making sure you got to laugh like every 3 or 4 seconds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's a lot different. And that was a learning curve for me because I was always a storyteller. Like,
yeah.
I'll talk your fucking ears off, man, if you let me. So I was always a storyteller. So I was like, oh, this will be easy, man. I'll get on stage. I'll tell my stories. But it's different because on stage, one-on-one, I can start telling you a story. You don't have to laugh every 5 seconds to be invested into my story. Right. You know what I mean? Because it's just me and you. You have to, because there's nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. But when you're on stage and you're trying to command the attention from 50 to 60 people and you haven't said anything of with any sort of punchline in 20 seconds, that story's trash. You know what I mean? So now you got to pick apart this story, add some shit in, take some. So it's a lot different, man. And that right there was my biggest learning curve. Was when I was like, okay, I have this story that happened in real life that is funny in its core. But now, how do I convince 50 people in a crowd that it's actually really funny? You know what I mean?
Well, like one of the jokes that I still do. It's like one of my best was when I first started telling that abortion story.
Yeah,
and Shear came up to me. It had to have been when I was hosting that mic, and Shear came up to me and was like, "You're a natural good storyteller. That's fact." He's like, but that story is way too fucking long. You need to cut it down.
Yeah.
And I got it down to about, what, maybe 2 minutes?
Yeah.
About 2 minutes, and it fucking crushes Dan. I mean, granted, when I say crushes, it gets the reaction that I want. Yeah. There's the people who fucking think it's hilarious, and there's the people who go,
but that's comedy, right?
Yeah.
Everyone shouldn't laugh at your jokes.
No.
Everyone should not laugh at every one of your jokes.
I want, like you said the one time, I want half the audience to be appalled and half of them to think I'm funny.
Yeah, and who said it? I think I was watching a video. Jerry Seinfeld was like, dude, everyone shouldn't laugh at every one of your jokes. There should be some people in the audience that are terrified of what you just said.
Yeah.
You know what
Patrice
I mean?
O'Neill was infamous for saying like.
Actually, I think it was Patrice. By the way, Patrice is my favorite comic of all time.
He was great.
Did you? We all got robbed, man. Only got one special. Oh, dude.
Did you happen to see him when he was in town with the Traveling Virus tour?
No, I wasn't. I probably wasn't living in Cleveland at the time. I've been here for four years.
This was definitely before that then.
Yeah, he passed
before this. 6-7 years ago.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah, man, him and dude, I couldn't even imagine coming up in a group with like Bill Burr and Patrice O'Neill. Dude, like, can you imagine the laughs? I'd have no other life. I'd live at the club, dude. That'd be the greatest time of my life.
You will find your core group of people like that, and I think that's one of the things that you have to look forward to as a new comic, because there's a lot of people railing against cliques and shit.
Yeah.
That happens everywhere. This is not just a Cleveland problem, and it's not really even a fucking problem.
It is clicky here, though, right?
I mean,
it's kind of clicky. I'd say it's kind of clicky. Yeah. I'm agreeing with you in the sense that I don't think it's so much a problem.
Clicky could be one way of putting it, but like Ryan said it the best that one night. People are just friends. They have a rapport with each other.
Yeah.
Like, and that is like, if you those are the walls that I'm talking about breaking down. Like, if you see four guys that like you look up at on stage, you're like, oh God, they're funny. Oh, they're all hanging out. I'm going to go join in. Like, of course they're all going to look at you like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
Like, it's just going to happen naturally. That could be viewed as clicky. It could just be viewed as people being friends. I mean, I see it from both aspects, though.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, I go to shows with you. I hang out with who I hang out with. Like, I'm not here to make more friends. I know that sounds like a dickheaded thing, but it's just the truth.
As long as you're not on the opposite end of the spectrum. As long as you're like, I'm not here to make friends, but I'm also not here to like shit on you.
Yeah,
you
know I'm not here to make enemies either.
Exactly. Mm. I think that's where when you start getting, at least for me, and I'll just speak for myself, I think that's where I'm like, all right, I'm not fucking with that dude, because I know for a fact, and I'll just speak for myself, I'm a very personable person. Like, there's no one that I don't think I can't get along with if it was at least on my terms.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, absolutely.
So that's when it's like, okay, I don't think you're here to make friends, but you're kind of shitting on me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if I've known you for 6 months and you walk into a room and you can't even like look at me, or when I like try to shake your hand, things are a little weird, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Things are a little weird here. Not even look at me, but like act like
you don't exist.
Act like you don't even understand why I'm here,
right,
type thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think that's where, and I think that starts to build up, man, and it starts to
it can be disheartening to some people. I mean, I could see that for sure. I mean, like, I'm just of the school of like, if you don't fucking like me, that's on you. Mm. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
that's just how I am.
I'm with you,
and
man.
I wear like, I'm the type of person where I wear my emotions on my sleeve. If I don't like you, chances are you're probably gonna know it.
Yeah,
like, I'm not gonna go out of my way to be a dick to you,
but I'm also not going to go out of my way to make bullshit small talk with you because I don't fucking care.
Dude, I'm with you, and I'm all for what you guys said about this isn't a game where people go out at night to try to make friends. I get that.
Yeah.
Naturally, is it going to happen? Of course, man. Of course. We're all, at the end of the day, we're all trying to do something very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's going to happen. Don't try to use that against me. You know what I mean?
Right,
or don't, for no reason other than I'm a new face and I'm trying.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Try to use your leverage over me. And I've got a question, man. And this is the one thing I've actually been wanting to ask you since I listened to your last podcast with John. What the fuck is he talking about? He is too accessible to new comics for advice or for assistance. What does that mean?
What does it mean that he's too accessible? Well, I...
Because I'll be honest, shortly after that, I tuned out a little bit. Because it started going down this weird wormhole of hierarchy and superiority that I really wasn't interested in at that point.
Yeah, and that's understandable why you wouldn't be interested in. Because, you know, I think, when people shit on you, it's like they're not doing it like to toughen you up or play games with you a lot of the time. It's just because they need their own little ego boost and to establish their power so they can feel better about themselves, you know.
Yeah.
That's what they say bullying is. I think what he means by that is because he hosts two booked open mics. He hosts the Make 'Em Laugh Mondays at the Grog Shop. And he hosts Brothers Lounge, all right? They fill those two shows.
Is Brothers Lounge an open mic, though?
I mean, it's not an open mic, but they still, like, they book it.
Yeah, it's definitely a great show. I will give you that. I mean, it's a booked show, right?
Yeah, it's a booked show. But, you know, they're basically like, okay, I have a list of people that are interested in doing these rooms, and a lot of those people are new. So... and John hosts both of them. So John is the face of both those shows and the access point to get on those shows. Both of them are with audiences. And so, of course, if it's a show in front of an audience, you want to do it, even if you're new. So, of course, who are you going to talk to when it comes to, anything about comedy? You're going to talk to the guy that's running the show that you want to get
person
on.
Person that you keep seeing. Yeah.
So he's very accessible to new comics in terms of that because he's put himself in a position where he has to be because that's who he's putting on his shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think John gets frustrated. And again, this is just a theory.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he has an idea of what it takes to make a good show. And if you're using newer comics, there's going to be a lot of lull in the show because some people just they haven't figured it out yet. This is part of the process of figuring, and the process, you know, like, you know, you've been through, you know what happened, you know how you feel when a joke bombs, but like, you have to go through it. Like, this is all trial and error. So there's a lot of error when you're using newer guys. And I think it gets frustrating for him because he feels that, okay, if I just tell you this and if you can just do this, you will be much better. And he's not always right.
Well, then wouldn't he want to be more accessible to guiding some of these new comics rather than less successful? That was my take on it. And I guess the way I heard it and the way it sounded to me, and I listened to the entire podcast up to that point, the way it sounded to me was I'm on the top of this totem pole. I should not even be having these conversations with these new comics. I'm too accessible to these new comics for their own benefit.
Okay.
And to me, that's where I'm like, okay, well, it's contradicting what you said earlier where you're giving out all this advice, no one's taking it, so now it's affecting your show. Hmm. And to me, it's like, well, what the fuck is it, man? Which one? Because it can't be both. And at the same time, it's like, you're in charge of booking this show. So if you know there's someone that's not going to produce, in my opinion, why book them? And if you book them, why use it against them if you're going to try to pull yourself away from being accessible to anybody? And you're not even going to guide these people or give guidance to these people that you expect to be on your show.
Mm-hmm.
Mold your show, right?
Yeah.
That's what I would think. Or at least try to mold your show. Give advice. Be more accessible. And I guess that's just me. If I wanted a product from a distributor, I would be as exposed to that distributor as possible to get the product that I want. Now, it's up to that distributor to follow through, but it's also up to me to allow that distributor to make that product.
Well, we go back to what we said at the beginning, that we're people first before comedians. So we can't really commodify comedians because, you know, every comedian, in order to get through to them, you have to take a different approach because the same approach isn't going to work with everybody. And I think, and again, I am not speaking for John, I think John is a basketball coach and a sports guy.
And this is his woman's basketball, so.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. John, I'm kidding. All right, I'm sure you guys are great.
At Zach O'Ryan if you want to bitch at him. But no, it's, you know, that approach doesn't always work. Like, you can't be a judge. He keeps bitching about, like, it's Revenge of the Nerds out there. It fucking is, and you're going to have to deal with it, faggot.
Not at Zach O'Ryan for that one.
No, I mean, I say words. You're going to have to deal with it. But, you know, you just, that's what's going on in the world right now. I mean, you have to take a softer touch to things. Otherwise, your message is going to get muddied in the fact that you're being, too aggro. And, you know, I think that's where his, like, I'm too accessible problem comes in, because yes, he has made a concerted effort to try to, you know, get people to, you know, up their game. Like, that's like, he wants to build a thing, but, you know, he's approaching it incorrectly. Whereas you have to take each individual person and really get to know them before you can, like, just expect that they're going to respond a certain kind of way to your style of coaching.
Yeah, and how about talking to someone as an adult that fends for themselves, that pays their own bills, that does that thing? Talk to somebody, like you said, man. We are all people first.
Mm-hmm.
No one is going to listen to anything you have to say if the first thing out of your mouth is, stop being such a child. Listen. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to tune you out.
Yeah.
I don't care what you have to say. I don't care if it's the best advice you've ever had to give me. But it's like, at the end of the day, we're all trying to do this, man. And we're all people before we're comics. So to get what you desire and to get what you want from all this, like Jeremy's saying, you have to approach this correctly.
Mm-hmm. You have to take a more individual approach. It's just not... You're not coaching a team. You're coaching people, and individual people, and they all have their own damage, their own way of looking at the world, different cultures, and you have to be more aware of that. If you're going to put yourself in a position where you want to, like, build people up, the same approach isn't going to work for everybody. And the sports, you know, breaking sports and military mentality of breaking people down so you can build them back up. Like, we're slowly learning that that's a fucking terrible thing.
It ain't gonna work, man. I did the military thing. And like what you said, dude, it seems like that sometimes. Not, obviously, I'm not comparing military to comedy, right? Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, in the military, the more time you have in, the higher grade you are. It doesn't matter how good you are at your job.
Yeah.
It's just the more time you've been in, that's what it is. And then the hierarchy of things are the way you treat your subordinates. Yeah. And to me, it's night and day between comedy and like the military or like sports. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's earn your keep, but when you have at least shown that this is what you're trying to do, and no matter what you say, I'm gonna keep trying. Understand that you can't address everybody exactly the same. Especially you can't address somebody as a subordinate comedian, especially in a private conversation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It comes down to, I go back to, like, I hear all this, and it's like, I mean, I've gotten along with John since I started doing comedy. Like, never
John
had.
Brought me in.
Yeah.
There will always be a soft spot for you in my heart, man. I love you for that. John Bruton brought me in. He gave me my first shot at comedy.
Well, one of the things that I've always respected about John is John is very blunt, and he will call it like he sees it. Maybe you or anybody doesn't agree with that, but that's just the way he is. But at the same time, like, as far as I go, which, I mean, I don't get on stage very often, but it's just like, I don't fucking care what anybody thinks aside from you or, you know, my close, like, friends. I was like, I'm not here to do this for anybody else. Like, right. That's what, you know, and that's like what goes back to like the beginning. Like, I'm not here to impress any other of my peers, really.
Right, right.
I'm here to impress myself and the crowd.
There's something to be said for that, man. And I think the success that would follow that would be is so much more amplified than a success that would follow someone handing you a blueprint and you kind of connecting the dots.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I have so many ideas, and I know that they're not going to work for everybody, and I try to tailor them and create opportunities where I can, but I just can't.
Man. Just one idea. Stop being a dick. You don't need to be a dick. John Bruton, stop being a fucking dick, dude. Like,
oh,
you know what I mean?
Off.
The guy's one of my friends. You know what I mean? Like, he's one of my, I've hung out with him outside of comedy. Like, I respect him. I think he's very funny. I think he's going to go places. But you don't need to be a dick, dude. You don't need to be a dick. I know that's like the persona you're putting on. And we all have our own personas. Mm-hmm. Jeremy, when I first met you, I was like, I don't know if that guy is just like the sweetest dude of all time or if he's a complete asshole.
He's both.
But I at least tried to find out, and I found out he's the sweetest fucking guy of all time. I don't care how many tattoos he's got on his forearms. You know what I mean? He's a good dude. And I think John is a good dude too.
He is.
But I think for some reason he's got this fucking thing where he's got to be asshole John. And it's like, man, what are you doing?
But I don't think John has any qualms with that though. I think he knows that. I mean, he said before. I think he does too.
I think Marilyn Manson knew he was a serial killer too, but it doesn't make it right. You know what
Marilyn
I mean?
Marilyn Manson or Charles Manson?
Charles Manson. I don't know. I'm four glasses deep. Yeah. So,
yeah.
No, but you know what I mean?
It's like
we're all. Don't add more walls to what is already seemingly impossible. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, don't add more stress to what I'm already trying to barrel through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, especially when coming into the game, knowing that you're a superior in this and you've been doing this and knowing that all I want to do is listen to what you have to say.
Yeah.
Don't try to give me reasons not to listen to what you have to say.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
I have a very specific way I like to be talked to. And being a dick to me is not the best way to get across.
I pay all my own bills, dude. I don't answer to nobody in my house.
You're a grown adult.
Why would I go out there and answer to it?
Well, I mean, the converse, I don't know if I'm using the right word, but basically the opposite of
I rarely use the right word, so go ahead.
The theory is that if you can't take the abuse from your peers, how are you supposed to handle, the horrible shit that happens to you, like, while you're on stage? And, you know, there's something to be said for that, only because, you know, there's no worse feeling in the world. And I know it's because I've done it a lot. There's no worse feeling in the world than going up and doing everything exactly right on stage and still getting nothing.
Oh, yeah, man.
So getting that kind of, there's something to be said for dealing with the BS that comes from other people who, you know, at his core, I truly believe that John wants to help. I just think his approach is incorrect, and that has always been my position.
100% agree with that. Yeah. And if there was one thing you could take from anything I've said regarding him on this, that would be it, because I do feel that way. But at the same time, it's like, how long do you just let that happen because in your head you know that that's what you think? Or do you say something or treat the situation accordingly? And I think I think you just, at some point, you have to just realize, like, dude, this isn't the way to go about it, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've said it once, and I'll say it again. If you are cruel to new comics, people remember that, and they will not defend you when they come for you. So just keep that in mind.
Ooh, dark.
Yeah, well...
It's like the end of like a Todd McFarlane Spawn.
Holy shit. Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lord have mercy.
I've been through a lot with...
There's multiple exits here. Thank God.
Like various people over the years. And that's like the one thing I can definitely tell you happens. So, you know, there is an art to being cruel to somebody, and you have to do it correctly. And... it's just what it is.
And not to be cliche, but I've always followed this, and it's like, dude, like how would you want your introduction into comedy to be? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Would you want there to be somebody shitting down your throat, essentially almost making you feel like this isn't something you may want to be doing? Or is this something that... You know what I mean? Like
your throat. I mean, you and I, you initially, we all do it at first. Everybody throws themselves at the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And then... they tear you apart, and the ones that like you take you aside and be like, all right, if you're going to keep doing this, I got your back.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that too, man. And like I said, dude, there's not a better... I don't think, from the people I've talked to, I wouldn't have chose a better city to start this in than Cleveland. And going into Chicago, I know I'm walking into a fire, man, but I'm glad I got to experience this. And for the most part, everybody here is great, dude. Yeah. Everybody here is great. I mean, I've been taking... I can't believe I've only been doing this for 6 months, man. I'm getting paid shows that I had no idea would even... I don't even understand when they hand me some. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's really weird, but and I'm super appreciative of it. But
yeah. Well, Zacho, we're glad to have had you here for a short time.
Great conversation.
It's been a blast.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
So we have to go into our plugs. Shout out to Pete Melk, our producer. He does the thing here at Milky Way Recordings. It's homie for homies here. Also, Sam Holmes, who did our logo. So you can find her on the Instagram at Sam_Holmes. That's Holmes like you live in, not Holmes like you hang with. And we have to say hello to our sponsors. Please check them out on the Twitters and the websites. It's Chad Weaver, at Weaver Chad on the Twitter. Chris Clem of Chris Clem's Cavscast.
That's Chris_Clem.
Chris_Clem. Just Fall Stitch, at Epic Fall on all the social media. And, of course, Brit Fox, X Fox Rocks on Snapchat and Instagram. And Plight of the Stripper Herder. Play of the Stripper Herder is a blog chronicling the experiences of floor guy at a strip club and everything that entails. He's a wonderful writer. And you can check it out at plightofthestripperherder.blogspot.com. Jordan, I don't think we're going to find anybody that hates being a new comic as much as Zach O'Ryan.
No, there is another. I won't apologize again. I'm a rampant offender. You can see right through my skin. I don't care about making mistakes. I keep saying no. Falling on my face. Feed me nothing ages. Drag me to the ring. Another discharge paper. Daniel's his drunkenness. I keep a bruise in my brain. And under the punches.
This episode of Let the Hateful Through You is brought to you by Chad Weaver.
Chad Weaver oozes genius from every pore.
Every pore.
Every pore.
Every pore.
At Weaver Chad.
Retweet and like everything.
Retweet and like everything.
Only God can suck him.
That's Chad Weaver.
This has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.